My mother asked that the share today be in the memory of my grandfather, her father, who is at Zeretzai today, Nechemya Meir ben Dov David. So I just want to tell you a story which is not about him, and then we'll begin. Years ago, I had a friend. We can call him Yisrael. Actually, his name was Yisrael, so that's why we can call him Yisrael. And this is a story of probably around 20 years ago. So Yisrael was somebody who, he was a nice religious Jew. I mean, I guess if he were here, he would insist on even being called Haredi. And he was the kind of person who loved Gedolim. I have no other way of saying that in any other language. He loved Gedolim. He loved the great rabbis. And whenever he and his wife would have a disagreement, they had a standing agreement when they disagree that they would go to one of the Gedolim, who would then listen and adjudicate and decide which one was right. And a particular question came up, and normally they would have gone to Rav Gussman, who already was not well at that time, so instead they went to Rabbi Scheinberg. And here was the argument. The argument was is that they had a child, and they had an argument what to name the child. Rav Moshe Feinstein had passed away not that long before. Then Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky had passed away, and he wanted to name his new son after either Moshe or Yaakov, after one of these Gedolim. So they went to one of the Gedolim to ask about naming after one of the Gedolim. And his wife wasn't happy. His wife said, but I forgot which side, once I had a grandfather that no one had named for. And said, it's very nice to name for great rabbis, but we should be naming for the grandfather. And he goes, no, we want to name for one of these great rabbis. So they went to Rav Scheinberg. So Rav Scheinberg said, so can you tell me about your grandfather? So he said, he was a simple Jew. He came from Europe. He lived in America. He goes, stop, what year? So he said, 1915 or so. And he goes, yeah, continue. He goes, a simple Jew. He was a Shomer Shabbos, but he was unlearned. He said, he was a Shomer Shabbos in New York? In 1915, he said he wasn't a simple Jew. He was a great Jew. Name after your grandfather. So my grandfather was a great Jew. So we're going to return today to... Excuse me? And we named one of our sons after my grandfather. Yishai Nechemya was named after my grandfather. So we're going to return now to this ongoing, non-ending argument which takes place, where I'm going to say an argument, trying to understand, let's put it like this, let's frame the whole issue. Does Yosef have a plan? That's the question. After all these years, and if you want to know exactly how many years, Yosef was sold when he was 17. When he was 30 years old, he stood in front of Paro. The man had been imprisoned by this point for a while. He'd been enslaved by this point for a while. The whole story of Potiphar's wife is in the past. He's 30 years old. He stands in front of Paro. He hears the dreams. 7 good years, 7 bad years. At the point where the brothers come and meet up with Yosef, it's after the 7 good, 2 of the bad. That means Yosef is now 39 years old. Or it means that 22 years have elapsed ever since Yosef has seen his brothers last. So I'm going to go back to my initial question. So did Yosef have a plan? So there's a couple of possibilities, and a couple of possibilities within the possibilities. One possibility is no, he had no plan whatsoever, and Yosef basically, you know, each day wakes up and plays it as it, you know, as he faces it. And I have no ability to understand that, even though I just said it. I just can't possibly accept this. And the reason I can't accept it is because Yosef is one of the greatest strategists that we've seen. I mean, he can have a short meeting, and in that short meeting, he turned the meeting into potential advice, into a job, into a career. He changed the economy of Egypt. He hears a dream or two dreams, he claims it's one dream, and he turns it into a 14-year economic plan, which that he then turns into a career that then spans from the age of 30 to the age of 110 when he dies. And during that whole time, I mean, Paro basically is not part of the picture. Paro's busy. He's got his harems. He's got his wine to drink. He's got all kinds of things to do. And Yosef runs the country. By the way, pretty much like happened in Potiphar's house. Yosef runs everything. Yosef runs the house. He runs the fields. Yosef runs everything. maybe even like it used to be in Yaakov's house. Which means Yosef is somebody who sees so many steps ahead. I can't fathom the possibility that Yosef has not already anticipated and already understands that the day is going to come that his brothers are going to show up. And when his brothers are going to show up, he already knows what he's going to say, and he already knows what they're going to say, and he already knows how he's going to respond to what they're going to say, and he already knows what he's going to do. So I'm going to say it again. So does Yosef have a plan? I certainly think he does. Now the question is, so what's the plan? And I think that's really what the issue is. And there are various possibilities here as well. Maybe the most human possibility, and we can decide if we like that or we want to go in that direction, is to take revenge. I mean, essentially, here are people that ruined his life, or, if we be more careful, certainly changed the trajectory of his life. In retrospect, you can say that they helped him, actually. Never would have had this career had they not done what they've done to him. And he certainly understands that and recognizes that. And that's part of what he says when he eventually speaks to the brothers, which means that there's really two conversations that interest me, and only one of them we're going to do today because we have to save something for next week. And one of them is next week. But there's only two conversations which are really interesting to me. The first conversation is when Yosef meets the brother after all those years. The other conversation is when Yosef reveals who he is after all these years. And even though, I'm going to say it again, it's very easy to look at both of these conversations and to say that Yosef is being reactive. That basically they come, they say, he has no idea what he's saying, he's being reactive. And the other possibility is that Yosef is being proactive. And I'll say it again, and that's essentially what we need to think about, what we need to consider. So one possibility within this is that Yosef wants revenge. Now, if Yosef did want revenge, there are so many delicious ways that he could have taken revenge against them. There's so many things he could have done. And just in case you think, but Yosef was so mean, what are you talking about? I mean, these are the dark ages. There are many dark things he could have done to them. And he didn't. He didn't. He does get, I don't really want to say a pound of flesh, he gets certainly a couple of grams, but he doesn't do what he certainly could do to them. So therefore, again, one possibility we've already started with is no plan. Second possibility is there's a plan. The plan is revenge, and I'm not completely comfortable with that because if this is revenge, come on, every one of us is more diabolical, and every one of us could have done a better job of taking revenge. So therefore, the pure revenge aspect does not necessarily speak to me, which leads us then to a couple of other possibilities, which I want to try to lay out as we proceed. One of the last public speeches I heard Rabbi Soloveitchik give, that was the whole point of the speech. He just kept saying it again and again. But how can you do this to the father? How can you do this to the father? And he went both ways against Yosef, the brothers. How can you do this to the father? What happened to the father? And he was very emotional in this talk. Anyway, so thank you for that. No, it's fine. But you know, that's really part of this Ramban that we agreed that we're going to get to, right? We agreed?
I tried.
Okay, so let's take a look. Source number one. You know what I learned this week? I knew this before. That if you look far enough, you'll find anybody who'll say anything, which is part of what I did this week. This week's share, I knew exactly what I wanted to say. But you know it's not authentic till you find somebody dead who said it already. So there's a couple of possibilities, either killing someone or finding someone. So we found someone dead. So give me a little bit of time and we'll get there. But again, before, it's not so important to me right now who says, just thinking, I know. I know, I'll say it again. Thinking through the possibilities, that is a possibility. What you can say is that you personally don't like that possibility, and I beat you to it. I already said I don't like that possibility. Because it seems very uncharacteristic to Yosef. Unless you want to say that for some reason Yosef has completely, you know, and I'll come back to this, that Yosef has just completely disassociated from this family. And once he's disassociated, then there is no plan because he wants nothing to do with them anymore. I will come back to that in a second. I'll come back. Source number one. Vayar Yaakov ki yeshevi b'mitzrayim. Vayomer Yaakov levanov lomet titrou. Yaakov realizes that there is a break in the famine in Egypt. There's food in Egypt. And you know, what are we doing? Like, There's food. We can get food. Now, I'm going to ask again. Does Yosef know that there's going to be a famine? Yeah, Yosef actually knew this 9 years before. Yosef knew 9 years before that there's going to be a famine in the whole area. And Yosef knew that people are going to come looking for food. And Yosef collected the food. And Yosef knew that there would be food lines. And Yosef knew that people would be coming, which actually means that Yosef also knows that his brothers are going to be coming. Vayom hinei shamati ki yeh shevet Mitzrayim ridu sham. There are those who like the redu, because they say the redu is 210 years. Redu, go down. Go down for 210 years, which is what they do. Redu shama. Vishivru lana misham v'nichi v'lo namot. Go get some food, we'll live, we won't die. But yirdu achei Yosef asara, Yosef's brothers, 10 in number, they go down, lishbor bar, mimitrayim. They go down. See, there's a good pasuk. We need to pay attention to this pasuk. Why do they go down? They go down to get food. By the way, there could have been another reason to go down. There could have been a secondary reason to go down. There could have been a secondary intention. There could have been this other thing. You know, once you're there, like maybe you want to go and see the sites. Maybe they want to go see the pyramids. Okay, that's a little silly. But maybe there's somebody in their family that once went there and they haven't seen for a while. But actually it says here, no. They go down, Lishbor Bar Mimitrayim, they go down to get food. And it doesn't mention that there may even possibly be a secondary intention. But when it came to Binyamin, he did not send him. Ki Amar, because Yaakov already says, Pen Yukra'enu Ason, that perhaps some kind of catastrophe could take place. V'yavol b'nei Yisrael, and we always note, and we always find it interesting when it shifts in a narrative from Yaakov to Yisrael. And the children of Yisrael come lishbor b'toch haba'im, and they come amongst all the other people that are coming. Ki'aharav eretz Kanan, because there was a famine in the land of Canaan, so everybody's coming for food. V'yosef hu hashalit, and Yosef is the ruler. Al ha'aretz, hu ha'mashbir l'chol ha'ma'aretz. Yosef is not only the ruler, he is also the person who has decided to micromanage the food distribution. V'yavoche Yosef, Yosef's brothers come, v'yishtachavu lo apayim aretz. His brothers come and they bow down to him. And now all of us who may have paid attention to what happened last week may find that somewhat interesting, because Yosef sort of had a dream that his brothers will bow down to him, and they said, are we going to bow down to you? You know? And what's the answer?
Yes.
Damn sure? Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, that you hear.
That's cool.
No, they didn't say it. He said it. They bow down, and as they're bowing down, Vayar Yosef et Echav Vayakirim. Yosef sees his brothers, and he recognizes them. Vayitnaker Aleihem. He makes himself into a stranger, Nachri. Vayidberitim Kashot. And he spoke to them harshly. Vayomer Leihem Ein Batem. And he says to them, where did you come from? Vayomer they say, Me'eretz Kanan, Lishbar Ochel. They said, we came from the land of Canaan to get food. By the way, that's their first mistake. Any of you who ever get interrogated by the police or border control or anyone else, answer what you're asked. Don't give too much information. What was the question? Where are you from? What is the answer? Eretz Canaan. What do they answer? Eretz Canaan to get food. Yeah, really? That's why you're on a food line? Like, that was the obvious point. So when you say you're here to get food, so like, what are you not here to do then? We need saying too much opens them up. Yes, do you all understand that? Oh, yeah.
The psychologist.
Stu's been interrogated, right? Many times. Okay. What? Here we go. They give too much information. This is not what they should have said. And again, now we're told now, Yosef recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. But Yizkor Yosef et haChalamot, and Yosef remembers the dreams, Asher Chalam Lahem, but Yomer Lahem, and he says to them, Raglim Atem, Lerot et Erev et haAretz Batem. And he says that you're spies, and you've come, there is this other reason that you're here. You're not here for the reason that you said. You're here because you're spies. And I don't want to go too much into this because I've done this in the past, I've said this in the past, I've written this in the past, but I'm going to say this very quickly, what I think Yosef is saying. And again, this is at least one approach because I do want to open up to other approaches. The way that I've read this is that there's two ways to read Erevat Haaretz. One way to read Erevat Haaretz is that you're spies and it's the good of this entire country that you are trying to destroy. You're looking for the weak parts of the country. You're looking for the vulnerable parts of the country. You're soldiers who are looking to attack and maybe win a war and take over the food and take over the resources and so on and so forth. The other possibility of Erevat Haaretz is literally the nakedness of the land. You're coming to, you guys were checking out the red light district. So the reason for this, and I actually prefer the second way because it's more interesting, and that is that what Yosef is saying to them, he's using privileged inside information that he actually has, and that is that they have another brother. By the way, along the way, they're going to again give two information. Let's pay attention. But Yomer Lehem, Kerev to Aretz Batim Lerot. You've come to look for, I'm going to say again, the red light district. But Yomer, when they say, and this is their defense, which is a terrible defense, Shneim Asar Avadecha Achim Anachnu, your servants. By the way, notice along the way, how many times he says, Avadecha, 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 the brothers say this. Will you rule us? Will we serve you? So when I go back to the dreams, yeah, well, apparently the answer to that again is yes. Sorry, where did I skip? Yud. But Yom Rilav Lo Adoniv Avadecha Banu Lishbar Ochel. No, no, we are not here looking for anything. Your servants are here in order to look for food. Which, by the way, was the stated purpose when they come down. Kulanu b'nei ishachad, nachnu, we're all sons of one man. Kenim anachnu, you know, we're straightforward, honest people. Lo yodecha maraglim, we're not spies. We're not looking for anything. Vayomer lim lo, ki erev ta'aretz batem lerov. No, no, you're looking for something. Vayomer shnei masar v'decha chim anachnu, b'nei ishachad, we are 12 sons of one man, be'eretz kanan, b'nei hakatonet avinu hayom v'charinenu. One is still with his father, and one isn't here. By the way, is this a smart thing to be telling him? All this information over here. By the way, later on, when Yaakov questions the wisdom of telling them this, they deny it. Yehuda lies to Yaakov and says, no, he asked about all these things. No, they offer this information. But notice again, we're 12 sons, one is with their father, ve'echad einenu, and one isn't here. Vayomer lehem Yosef, hu asher dibartim aleichem lemor meraglim atem. That's the one I'm talking about when I said that you're spies. Which means Yosef is begging them to say that they're looking for Yosef. And they absolutely cannot say this. So as far as saying that Yosef has a plan, yeah, I think that Yosef's, I would say, so far, that the first level of this plan is that he, after 22 years, would love to believe that his brothers actually feel bad about what they did. Again, Yosef is very smart and Yosef is very sharp and Yosef sees the future quite well. But does he know what has happened over the last 22 years? Does he know if his brothers had any sleepless nights? Does he know if his brothers ever felt bad about what they did? Did they ever say, we wish we didn't do it? Did they ever say to themselves, we wish we can fix this? He doesn't know that. And you know what his fantasy is right now? His fantasy, again, what it seems to be, is that they're looking for him. His fantasy is that when they finally come to Egypt, they're looking for him. And that's what he says to them right away. You're looking for something right now. No. You guys have been going around. And again, think about how actually cruel this is. Because Yosef, when he was 17 years old, in their perspective, was a loser. I mean, everyone else sees Yosef's greatness except for them. So Yosef is a loser. What is he going to? Okay, he's a good-looking guy. So what happens to good-looking guys when he gets sold as slaves when they're 17 years old? They end up in the red light district. And Yosef is saying to his brothers, why aren't you going there looking for something? And they say, no, we just want food. Aren't you looking for someone? One is missing. He's the one I'm talking about. No, we just want food. And again, I'm going to say, does Yosef have a plan? Well, the first stage of the plan is going to have to be assess. You can't really have a plan until you assess the situation, what it is right now. When I know what the situation is right now, then I can continue. Okay. I want to pause here.
There's an elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is the non-recognition of their brother. How can this be?
I'll address that in a moment. Rav Yitzchak Karo, in source number 2, addresses that point. Okay. But I'm going to warn you now that Rav Yitzchak Karo is based upon the Ramban that we have to get back to. But then along the way, we're going to make a very sudden shift, and I'm going to move away from everything I've said so far today. So when I do that, don't get upset with me. I just think that there's an approach which makes a lot of sense. Assessing the situation, looking what's going on, hoping that they're looking for him, really realizing they're not looking for him, and then he goes into his plan, and then that plan would be, okay, they're not looking for me, at least let me see how they're treating Binyamin, and that's the continuation. As I'm saying, that is what I've said in the past, and now I want to pause a second, let's look at Rav Yitzchak Karo. V'yesh lomar, ki kol ma sha'asa Yosef le'echav, haya kavanato l'shem shemayim. Okay, just stop there for a second. What he said, by the way, this Rav Yitzchak Karo is an uncle of Yosef Karo, a little earlier. And what he's saying is that, first of all, everything that Yosef did is L'shem Shamayim. Yosef did everything with good intentions. Yosef does it for the sake of heaven. Which means, just in case that I was willing to embrace this idea that Yosef really wants to take revenge, and we'll see there's a little half of a line in the Ramban, hopefully we'll get to, which considers this. He says, no, everything Yosef did is L'shem Shamayim. So the approach that he's taking is they need to do tshuva. They need to fix what they've done. And therefore what Yosef is trying to do is to get them recognition of the sin, get them recognition that they did something wrong, and getting them to say we'll never do this again, or getting them to say that what we did was horrific. And somehow Yosef wants reproachment and Yosef wants healing. That's the approach that he takes. And as I said, that's really the direction we've gone in the past. And that, now, your point, regarding that Yosef recognizes them, and this is brilliant. I've seen this before, and I couldn't find it. I thought it was the Sforno, but I couldn't find it in the Sforno, and I looked. Why does he accuse them of being spies? This was a proactive response of Yosef in order to take away their ability of questioning who he is. It's a tactic. Once he calls them spies, what do spies do? They start asking around, seeking information. Once he calls them spies, they can't question about who is this ruler? Where did he come from? Because the second they do it, so they're spies. So he again takes a completely different approach about being spies, that the spies is a defensive tactic of Yosef in order to assure that they will not uncover his identity. I'll read it again. To shut their mouths, that they can no longer question who is this fellow, because if they ask, they'll prove there are spies. By the way, that's the key line that we wanted to get to. And the fact that Yosef never contacted his father, we're in source number 2, in the fourth line, Uma shelo shalach igeret la'aviv, regarding the fact that Yosef never sent a message, a letter, a postcard, dear dad, in Egypt, having a great time, right? Wish you were here. Love, Joe, right? No letter like that ever gets sent. And he goes, hold it. Now this idea of Yosef contacting his father is something which has actually tortured, or the ironic thing is, the first one I think that brings it up is the Ramban. He doesn't have it as a question. The Ramban has it as proof. We'll see that in a second. He goes, "Umay shelo shlach igeret la'aviv," and the fact that Yosef never sent the letter to his father, "Lefi she'amar avi ruach hakodesh helim mimenu gam kin ani kamo kein." Yosef says to himself, and I want to pause for a second. We'll see a little bit later on in the Nitziv that Yosef believes that his dreams are prophecy. And I think Yosef has a real good reason to believe that, is that every dream that Yosef touches comes true. Yeah, what would you call that if you don't want to call that prophecy? Do you remember the slight intrigue that we had in the previous generation between Rivka and Yitzchak, between Yaakov and between Esav? And all that came back to a prophecy that Rivka neglected to tell. And we all questioned that point. Why didn't Rivka ever tell you? She had a prophecy. She knew what was going to happen. Why didn't she ever tell? So now you have Yosef growing up in the next generation, having seen what happens when you don't share information. So Yosef has this dream that all of his brothers are going to bow down to him. Yosef says, really, it behooves me to share this with them because this is a prophecy of what's going to happen. I'm sure they would like this information, which of course some of you are going to say, yeah, yeah, that's the information. But if we pause for a second, and I think this is important, but let's look at the Nitziv. I know we're in the middle. We'll go to the Nitziv anyway. The Nitziv is in source number 5. Et ha-chalomot, Yosef remembers the dreams. Shnei chalomot, remembers both dreams. Vodia katuv shalom achmat nikimachas v'shalom. Yosef, again, is there a plan? What does the Nitziv say? Yeah, there's a plan. But the plan is not based upon revenge. God forbid. Hitalech imam be'akshut kazeh. It wasn't because of revenge that Yosef goes and treats them so harshly. Ela mishum shenizkar ha-chalomot shehu ke'en nevu'ah. That Yosef remembers the dreams, and as far as he's concerned, that these are akin to prophecy. That's what the Nitziv says. Now once you understand that this is prophecy, that may color everything else which is taking place. So going back now to Rav Yitzchak Karo, why does he never contact his father? So what does he say? And this may be very similar to Rivka's thinking. What does he say? L'fi sha'amar avi ruach ha-kodesh she'elim mimenu gam kenani kemokein. My father Yaakov is a prophet. If God did not share this information with him, apparently I'm not the one who's supposed to share this information with him. Which means the reason that Rav Yitzchak Karo gives that Yaakov is not sent a letter by Yosef is because Yosef feels if God has kept Yaakov in the dark on this, then this must be the will of God. Let me continue. I see you shaking your head at me. I'm used to it. Umash katav vayar Yosef l'fi sheshnei dvarim yakir echad et chavero. And it says that Yosef sees them and they don't recognize him. People recognize people by two things. Bira'ut or bekol. Okay, this goes back. You recognize people by what they look like and by their voice. V'tekef ayar Yosef et achav hakirein. Immediately Yosef recognizes them, bira'ut, when he sees them. V'lefishim gam kin ra'u v'lo ikiru. They see him, they don't recognize him. Asav atzmo hitnakrut k'mo shetamar shesam hamitznefet al panav. Yosef at that point sees them and recognizes, but he puts his mitznefen on his face to cover his face, and it's like a scarf,
a veil.
He puts the veil on him to separate from them. That means they can no longer see him. Ukeneged hakol regarding his voice, shelo yakiru bekolo v'deber itam kashot bekas kedesh leirgishu bekolo. He speaks to them with anger. Because they apparently, according to what he's saying, never heard him speak like this before. So again, according to this whole approach of Yitzchak Karo, Yosef is going into hiding to protect his identity by accusing them of being spies, by covering his face, and by speaking to them differently. So again, you're saying the elephant in the room is that why don't they recognize Yosef? So he's claiming that Yosef does everything that he can to make sure they won't be able to recognize him. The Kohen wears one. It's not a crazy thing for a leader to create distance between himself and between the people. But again, he's saying that the text over here would seem to have numerous, not just one. He seems to have numerous indications. And by the way, the most famous person who wore a mask or a veil was Moshe. Okay. So again, just to pause on this point, you say, why did he recognize him? So you see that he's troubled by that same idea, and he sees a number of things that Yosef does in order to protect his identity. Yes?
I don't think he said it, but I heard that Yosef thought that his father was in on the
Okay, give me a second, and I'll get to that. Look at the Ramban in source number 3 now. The Ramban in source number 3. Vayiskor Yosef et chalamot shechalam lemaleihem. He remembers the dreams. V'yadashin et kenmu. He knew they were going to come true. Shehu hishtachavu. Of course, they already bowed down to Lashon Rashi. Ulafi da'ati. According to me, shadavar behefech. The opposite is true. He remembers all the dreams of Sher Chalam, Lehem. He knows that the second dream has not come true. But the second dream, all of them have to bow down. His father has to bow down. Everyone has to. It means that Yosef is going to be motivated, according to the Ramban, to make sure the dreams come true. So I'm going to say it again. I cannot understand this Ramban without the Nitziv. And the truth is, I understood it without the Nitziv, but I just assumed the same thing. I'll explain. The Akedat Yitzchak, the commentary, the Akedat Yitzchak, attacks the Ramban terribly on this. He says, man's role in life is to be ethical. You want the dreams to come true? What are you talking about? You need to do what's right. You go back to the father. Your father, we'll continue in the Ramban for a second. The only way I can understand this, that the dreams have to come true, is if the Ramban understands that these dreams are prophecy. And if they're prophecy, again, the Sar Hamashkim's dreams come true, Paro's dreams come true, Yosef's dreams are going to come true. Which means Yosef knows that this is what's going to happen. This is how it has to happen. Let's read a little bit more in the Ramban. Ki yodav v'pitronam ki kol achav yishtachavu lo. He knows that everyone's going to have to bow down to him. I'm skipping down 5 lines towards the end of the line. V'achareishin et kayem achalom harishon, higidlam kayem achalom hasheni. Ulule kein, had it not been the case that Yosef was motivated to make these dreams come true, ha-Yosef chotei chet gadol, had this not been the case, then Yosef would be guilty of a terrible sin, litzar et aviv, to cause his father pain, ulamido yamim rabim bishchol, and cause his father to spend all this time in mourning, the evil al Shimon ba'alav, to mourn for both him and for Shimon, who now is missing as well. The afim haya, and this is the line I love, the afim haya ritzono litzar et achiv ktsat, and even if he wanted to cause his brothers a little bit of pain, eich lo yichmol al sevat aviv, that's another great line, how could he not feel bad for his father's graying hair? Right, with all those gray hairs that you put on your father's head. Aval et hakol asa yafa b'ito l'kayem achalamot ki yadashim kemu b'emet. Yosef did everything to make the dreams come true because he knew that they had to come true. And a little bit lower down, again where it's underlined, v'chein ani omer, and similarly I say, shekol ha'aninim ha'ela haya b'yosef b'chachmoto b'pitron achalamot. Everything Yosef did was interpretation of the dreams, and I'm going to say it again, I'll belabor the point, which he sees as prophecy. Kiyesh l'tzmoa, otherwise one can ask an unbelievable question. So now notice, the famous question of the Ramban is not a question, it's a proof. Because if you don't say this, yesh l'tzmoa, one would have to ask an unbelievable question. Acher she'amad Yosef Mitzrayim yamim rabim v'ya pakid v'nagid v'beit sar gadol b'Mitzrayim, after Yosef was in Egypt for so much time and was in charge of the home or the estate of a very important person, eich lo shalach katab echad la'aviv lo'odiyu l'nachamo. How was it that Yosef never sent a letter to let his father know that he was okay? Because the distance between Egypt and Israel is 6 days of travel. And if it would have taken an hour journey, sorry, a year journey, so that would have been worthwhile as well. Then it certainly would have been worthwhile to Yaakov to come and to redeem Yosef and get him out of Potiphar's house. So as far as the Ramban is concerned, the fact that Yosef never reached out is actually the proof that Yosef had to make sure the dreams come true. And there's a lot more to say in this. I just want to pause for a second right now and address what you had said. This Ramban is not just the Ramban, the Rosh Mishans going to Rav Shimshon Feral Hirsch that we have in source number 4, and many people in between have raised this question of the Ramban. Around 1975, a person who I consider today to be probably the greatest teacher of Tanakh in the world today, Rav Yoel Ben Nun, wrote an article. By the way, I'm right now in the middle of a book about from Yossi Klein Halevi, the dreamers, about the Tzanchanim who liberated, and he was one of them. He was one of the Tzanchanim that liberated Har Habayit. It's just a fascinating book. Rav Yoel Ben Nun wrote this article, and he flipped it around, and he said, hold it a second. We always ask why Yosef never contacted Yaakov. Why did Yaakov never contact Yosef? Which is, of course, a ridiculous question, because Yaakov thought Yosef was dead. But Rav Ben Nun goes on to say, but did Yosef know that Yaakov thought that he was dead? And then he goes and he builds this whole case where what he claims is as follows, that essentially Yosef at some point starts questioning everything and says, why did my father send me? My brothers hate me, and he knew my brothers hate me, and he knew that all this would end up happening. And then he gets to this point that his father must have been in on it. And because he thought his father was in on it was the reason that he never contacted his father, which goes back, does Yosef have a plan? So you ask, did anyone say he doesn't have a plan? Yeah. He doesn't have a plan. Why? Because he realizes he was kicked out of this family, and he says, when Yishmael cannot get along with Yitzchak, they kick him out. When Esav and Yaakov can't get along, you know, they go in separate ways. You want to go to Lot and Avraham, they go in separate ways. And then Yosef comes to this realization that he's caused too much trouble, and he's been kicked out of the family. So, by the way, if you go in that direction, yeah, there is no plan, because Yosef never expected to get in contact with them again. Yosef is honoring then his father's, you love the way he flips it around, he's honoring his father's wishes as he perceives him, and says that they don't want me, so I will not join them. I'm respecting what my family wants. And then the brothers come down, and you can just imagine how carefully he's listening. 12 sons, one man, one with his father, ve'echad, einenu. He no longer is anymore. We have forgotten him from the family. And only later on in next week's parsha, when Yehuda gives his impassioned plea, Yehuda then says, my father had 2 sons from this wife, and one of them is dead, and if anything happens to this son, and that's the first time that Yosef hears that Yaakov thinks that he's dead, and that, according to Rav Yoel Ben Nun, is when he admits that he is in fact Yosef. And I just want to say, this is the simple way of saying it. It's really much, much more complex, the case that Rav Yoel builds, and it's a beautiful interpretation, which I think is 100% wrong. Part of why I think it's wrong is the same reason that everybody likes it, is that it's very contemporary. It's very 20th century. It's actually a 20th century teenager, unsure of his father's love. By the way, despite the fact that he's the favorite, despite the fact that his father gives him the coat, despite the fact that he doesn't work when the rest of the brothers work, despite every single piece of evidence to the contrary, oh, my father doesn't love me, and so on and so forth. And even if you want to say that as a 17-year-old, Yosef is having these thoughts, Yosef is such a confident individual in every other stage along the way. You're going to tell me that this individual, just when it comes to this family relationship, which, by the way, I accept as a possibility, but it just doesn't ring in character. And I think that Yosef has a much broader agenda of what he's trying to create. So just because sometimes you can say interpretation doesn't mean that that interpretation is necessary. The valid interpretation, I just want to say, and personally, I have all the respect in the world to Rav Yoel Ben Nun. I think he really is the most important teacher of Tanakh in the world today, and I think he and students that he has brought up, and I just want to say one more thing, he is also a world-class mensch. A number of years ago, I read an article that he wrote, and I sent him an email saying that there's a source that supports him. He wrote me back a letter thanking me, and really with unbelievable thanking me. The next week or a couple weeks later, my niece is in a shiur that he gives, and he quotes me in the shiur. Ever since then, every time he gets to this topic, he quotes me. A couple of years ago, he called me up and he asked me for my address. He wrote a book and he quotes me in the book and so on. And this past year, and I think I told you, this past year in the Yimeyun in Gush, he quoted me. I got around 50 text messages from people. You know, Rabbi Olbin quoted you. Yeah, he can't stop quoting me. But he wants to bring Geula l'Olam. Because he could have said, I had this idea before. So I just showed him that the Vilna Gaon actually had beat him to it. But he could have said, the Vilna Gaon said it. He didn't have to say, I told him the Vilna Gaon said it. But as I said, he's a man with unbelievable integrity who is a first-class mensch, aside from being a first-class Talmid Chacham. There is a midrash, it's probably the last midrash that we have, which of course we're not going to get to, which is source 14, which sets up parallels between Yaakov's life and Yosef's life, which I'll come back to. And I just heard my father say something Rabbi Soloveitchik said. Right, but he's accused them of being spies. The question is, what does he mean that they're being spies? What is it that he's accusing them of looking for? That's the question. I said there's two possibilities there. I know, but he says you're spies. Okay, let's try with the time that we have left to get what I actually wanted to say today. Look at source number... Let's go back to last week. Source number 6. Vayeshev Yaakov Ve'eretz Megurei Aviv. Yaakov settles... Notice the word shev. Vayeshev Yaakov settles... The Eretz Migurei Aviv, the word Migurei comes from the word gar. There's an aspect of strangeness to it. Yaakov settles in a place that his parents, grandparents, found themselves as being strangers. But Yeshev Yaakov, the Eretz Migurei Aviv. Rashi writes in verse 7, Va'od Nidrashbo, Va'yeshev, Bikesh Yaakov L'shev V'shalva. Yaakov wanted to live in tranquility. Kafatz alav robzo she Yosef. And he was hit, as it were, by the anger of Yosef, which means Yaakov thought that everything was accomplished already, and now suddenly this unexpected element takes place, and that's the whole episode of Yosef. And then Rashi writes, Tzadikim mevakshim leshev b'shalva, righteous, they want to live in tranquility. Omer Kodesh Baruch Hu, lo dayin lo tzadikim mashim lutukanam lo maba. God says to the righteous, you're going to have a good shin in the world to come. That's not enough for you. You want tranquility in this life as well? Now, the first time you read this Rashi, you say, okay, what does it mean that Yaakov wanted to live in tranquility? Does that mean that Yaakov wanted to retire, move to Florida, and essentially have no more patriarchal responsibilities? So, in that lecture that I told you that I was by Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said, but no, you need to understand the parallel between the world to come and the tranquility Yaakov was seeking. He said that what Yaakov wanted was the Messianic age. That Yaakov wanted there to be tranquility in the world right now. He wanted to get to the age of the Messiah. He said, but what are you talking about? You know, here we are all these thousands of years later, we're still not there. So then it comes down to something which we need to think about a little bit more. And Stu just touched it, so my father confirmed it. So let me say clearly, the rest of you hear it and understand it. You know, when we think about our Judaism today and what we know, there's so much information that comes at us from so many different places. You know, in a sense, in those days, it was a lot simpler. You know, you didn't have to learn any ketzos. There was no minchas chinuch. There was no gemara. I'm always amused when it talks about they used to sit and learn. So what did they learn? It probably wasn't all that much they were learning. But what did they know? They knew about the various conversations that took place between God and between the patriarchs. And the most basic one, which really set off the long-term plan, was something which was part of known as the Brit Bein HaBetarim, the covenant that God makes with Abraham. And within that covenant... And this is source number 10. Vayihi Hashemesh lavo v'tardima nafla l'Avraham, and the sun set, and sleep came upon Avraham, by the way, which means it's also a dream that we forget sometimes. And he has a dream, and he has a vision. V'nei imach ha'sheicha g'dola nofela t'olav, and great fear and distress falls upon him. V'yomer l'Avraham, and God says to Avraham, Yodea teda, you should surely know, ki ge'er zerecha be'eretz lo lahem. Your children will be strangers in a land which isn't theirs. V'avadum, they'll be enslaved, v'inu otam, and they will be abused. Arbamot shanan, 400 years. V'gam et ha'goya sher yavodu dam anochi, and I'm going to judge the people that do this to them. And then Pasuk Tet Zayin, V'dor harvi'i, Yeshuvu Hena. The fourth generation will return to here. Now, there's an inner contradiction in this prophecy or this dream. On the one hand, it says 400 years. On the other hand, it says the fourth generation. On the third hand, right, Tevye had three hands, we can have as well. On the third hand, it never did get to 400 years. We were not really slaves 400 years, unless you want to give God the credit for counting in the most creative way. The Mechilta tells us that God had set this up with the minimum and maximum. It's like you go to prison, you get X to X amount of time before you can get off on good behavior. The minimum was four generations, the maximum was 400 years. And Rav Soloveitchik suggested that when Yaakov hears this and he understands this, like any of us, we're looking at the prophecy and saying, when will this come true? When will this be fulfilled? And then Yaakov understands history. And this is the danger of reading prophecies. I got an email from somebody this week saying, so do you think we're getting really close to Mashiach coming? So I wrote back, I don't know. He goes, but you're a rabbi, whatever. So I said, given that 99.9% at least of people who've predicted these things have been wrong, why do you want me to join them? Right? But Yaakov looks at the prophecy and he says, enslaved, abused, a land which isn't theirs, fourth generation return. I was abused by Lavan. I was enslaved by Lavan. I was in a land which wasn't mine. The fourth generation, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, the fourth generation came back, everything's fulfilled. That's it. We can now usher in the Messianic age. Bikesh Yaakov l'shev b'shalva. Yaakov wanted to live in tranquility. And he never realized, no, there's more episodes coming. He never realized how much further all this is going to go. And when I say he never realized, I hesitate. Maybe at the end of his life when he sees the future, maybe then he does come to realize exactly how long all of this is going to take place. Now, let's pause there for a second.
There's also another possibility. He was right.
Okay.
Tina didn't know that.
100% accept that. Yes. Actually said that in the Shir yesterday. Yes, it could be that he was right, and these things have an open-endedness to them, and there's more than one possibility of the fulfillment. Now, let's take a look at source number 8, the Panim Yafot. The Panim Yafot is Rav Pinchas HaLevi Horowitz, lived in Frankfurt on Main. Vayeshev Yaakov, Pirish Vikesh Yaakov, Leshev Bishalva, and so on. Itab Midrash, there's actually a Midrash that says, and that's source number 9, so let your eyes go down to 9 for a second. Davar Achen Mugurei, in the land of his Migurei Begamatria, Matayim Bechamishim Vitesha, Miyom Sha'amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, La'avim Yodea Teda, Ad Sha'ashin Et Yashev Yaakov Avinu Be'eretz Migurei Aviv. He says Migurei equals 259, and that's what we're up to in the count of the 400 years from the day that God spoke to Avraham, which is interesting, which means that this Midrash is actually supporting what I said from Rav Soloveitchik. He's supporting it as saying that somehow the covenant with Avraham is connected with Yaakov's search for tranquility. Go back to the Panim Yafot. He quotes the Midrash, and then he says, Yesh leferesh ma sha'amar bikesh Yaakov v'shev b'shalva, dahainu shechashav shekvar nishalmu harbamut shana shenigzura bein habitarim. So there you have it. So the Panim Yafot beat Rav Soloveitchik by around 300 years, and he makes this suggestion. What Yaakov wanted tranquility is that he wanted the fulfillment of the Brit Bein Abtarim. Let's move on now. The Tzror Hamor. Somewhat of a Kabbalistic source. 11, page 3. I see that 3. 11, source 11. Look at the end of the source, top of page 4, where it's underlined. V'chalom. By the way, when does Yaakov see the latter answer? In a dream. Avraham Brit Bein Abtarim, in a dream. Yosef, in a dream. V'chalomot Yosef nitkashru b'chalomot aviv lahorot al yiridat Mitzrayim v'nyan shenitkayem gzeirat Bein Abtarim v'inyan sheYaakov banav yordu Mitzrayim l'svol hagalut hanirmaz la'Avraham. That Yosef's dream is connected to Avraham, to Yaakov's dream, which is connected to Avraham's dream, and all of this is going in one direction. And what is that direction? That the covenant, and what's the covenant? You're going to be enslaved for 400 years and then return. that all of these dreams are connected, but we're not all that sure right now how to work out the details. In source number 12, the Chida, source number 12, the Chida, in his commentary to Tehillim, writes, "If Shar Bimasha Bi'er Harav Yir Bekidesh Ma'arikuvin, Zal B'Sefer Givot Olam, Yisodoto B'Harare Kodesh, Chazal B'Mefarshim," and he said that, "I saw this in this book, which is based upon Chazal, B'Mefarshim Dimashin Imchar Yosef Le'Eved, the fact that Yosef was sold as a slave, Kiper Ha'idut Shel Gzeirat Bein Betarim, the fact that Yosef was enslaved in Egypt, that was already the fulfillment of the Brit Bein HaBetarim. Umepnei ze laku eser makot ala avdut shel Yisrael shelo hayu chayavim. V'zeh shekatav et hagdol yashayavod udon anochi." It's fascinating. He wants to say that Yosef suffered and was enslaved for the entire Jewish people, and that was the fulfillment of the Brit Bein HaBetarim. Now, I don't want to go this far, but I'll tell you how far I do want to go. What if Yosef is motivated by one thing? He's motivated by the most profound prophecy, which has been passed on already for a couple of generations. And that is the prophecy that God gave to Avram. That's the long-term prophecy that we know of. And Yosef knows that there needs to be slavery, and that there needs to be then redemption. And Yosef is looking in just like his father, because everything about Yosef is like his father. And Yosef is saying, okay, maybe my father was wrong about his slave. He goes, but we all need to be enslaved. My whole generation needs to be enslaved. And therefore, Yosef was already enslaved. He already worked in Potiphar's house as a slave. And now he realizes that one more thing needs to take place in order to pay this historical debt that God has asked for, and therefore all of his brothers need to be enslaved. And that's why it's so important to bring Binyamin down as well. Because if he can take all of them and put them in prison, and he can work them hard, but do it with love, then maybe they never have to be enslaved by Egypt, or they never have to be enslaved by anyone else. Which means his dream itself was, your brothers are going to bow down to you, and they say, you're going to be, we're going to worship you, not worship, we're going to serve you. And what's the answer? Yeah, you're going to serve me. You're the one who's actually, one is with food and one is with power. You're going to give us food? Yeah. And that's why they come the first time for food. That's their food, right? Their stalks bow down to his stalks. We're going to come to you for food. What's the answer? Yeah, you're going to come to me for food. We're going to bow down to you. What's the answer? Yeah, we're going to bow down to you. Now, let's be honest. Every one of us has always read this in a narcissistic way, that Yosef is self-centered and Yosef is narcissistic and Yosef has this some kind of an inner need that everyone's going to bow down to him. Now, what if Yosef is not narcissistic? What if Yosef is doing this because of some kind of a larger prophetic message that he thinks that he's received? And what if Yosef is doing this totally l'shem shamayim? He's doing this because he believes that if the slavery is fulfilled now, that we don't need to go and experience these further generations. Take a look at source number 13. 13 is a little complicated who it's from. You'll see the book itself, Yismach Yisrael, is from Yerachmiel Yisrael Yitzhak Danziger, who is the Rebbe from Alexander. The book itself includes Safach L'Seif U'Mukha Yoter Hupas V'Sifro Nikra B'Shem Aran Sh'Yisrael Nechtal V'Idei HaRav Yehuda Moshe Taibarg Hadmor HaChamishi B'Shel Shelet HaChasidut V'Heim Amarim Sh'Shama V'Atzmo M'Pi HaAdmor. So it's saying is that this is within the dynasty of the Alexander Chasidim, and exactly who had this idea, I'm not sure, because it says that this later one writes it based on the earlier one, but let's see what he says. He puts them in prison for 3 days. Kulam. It's really quite surprising. Look at that. We go back to the same question again. Isn't it surprising that Yosef never informed Yaakov, even after he was in charge? Why does he tell Yaakov? More than that, he tortures his father by taking Binyamin away from him. Asher nafsho k'shura b'nafsho. And Yaakov loves Binyamin. Moreover, he punishes Binyamin, who is not guilty of the sale. Which means if this whole thing is really about the sale of Yosef, so punish the ones who were involved. Why are you getting Binyamin involved in this? Binyamin was not involved in the sale. Shedibru b'zeh kol ha'mefarshim, and all the commentaries bring up this point. V'nira l'feresh, he says, it seems to, that we need to explain. Shekasher nigzerag zerat bein habitarim al zera Avram ve'amuchrach v'tkayem al kol panim. That once the Brit Bin of Terim, the covenant, that the children of Avram will be enslaved, that dream has to come true. That prophecy has to come true. V'ray Yosef ha'tzadik ki l'mechia shlachu elokim l'fneim. And Yosef HaTzadik realized that God sent him to keep everyone alive. And we'll skip a little bit. Lizot Elo Shvatim Akdoshim Shahima Yu Ikar Binyan Beit Yisrael Belem Nigzar Gzar Bidip Terim. And he goes on to say exactly. Ukishira Yosef Kibatzmo Terim Otol Dula Barzel Bav Benafsho Nafsho. He vinit Kikain Muchachim Kol Echav Beshvatim Lavo Lemitzrayim. Once Yosef was enslaved, he understood that all of his brothers need to be as well. Therefore Yosef took them and put them in prison as soon as they came. Had he informed his father, then Binyamin would have come with great fanfare and honor. Therefore, he created this whole thing to bring Binyamin down in a way that Yaakov won't know. He says that Yosef's entire motivation over here was in order to bring about the fulfillment of the Brit Bein of Terim, that your children will be enslaved, your children will be abused after Yosef went through this. And again, he says everything that Yosef did was l'shem shamayim. Because he was maybe, we'll say, he was hoping and praying, just like Yaakov. Yaakov bikesh l'shev v'shalva. Yaakov hoped, as we saw from the Baal Hafla, with Pinchas Horowitz, Yaakov had hoped that his experience in loved one was really the fulfillment of the Brit Bein of Terim. And now we saw from the Rebbe Me'Alexander that Yosef hoped that his enslavement and then his brother's enslavement was all that needed to happen, and that would be the fulfillment of the Brit Bein of Terim, and now we can then move on to the next epic. Unfortunately, and again, I accept 100% what my father said before, maybe it could have been the case. Maybe it should have been the case. Maybe that's all. But that's the problem with prophecies, is sometimes they're open-ended, and sometimes we don't experience what we need to experience in the time that we need to experience it. And then maybe sometimes we need to go through things again, or we need to take the full amount of time. Maybe it wasn't enough to do it in the short amount of time. But as I said, this is a whole nother approach to what Yosef was motivated by. This is a whole nother approach, what Yosef was thinking. And the reason why this is an attractive approach is that what it does is it connects to Yosef with his father and his great-grandfather and their dreams and what they saw. And that Yosef sees the exact same thing. And that Yosef's dreams were never narcissistic. They were never self-serving. Yosef's dreams were, how will the will of God be accomplished? And how will the Brit Bein HaPterim come to fruition? And if this is correct, then Yosef never wanted to hurt anybody along the way. He just wanted the will of God to be accomplished.